Right, thank you. And a big thank you, by the way, to Andy Wellington, a student at Pratt Institute, for these masterful videos. He can't be with us this evening, as cannot many of my students, as they have their open house tonight, alas. Joseph, I'm curious to know, Paul P. is one of your favourite painters. Is Keith Myerson one of your second favourite painters?
I'm afraid he is, David.
He is, yes. I see a certain kinship between Myerson and P., or between Keith and Paul. Just to remind us all, this is the salon-style installation of paintings that maybe part of their mastery is to disguise themselves as the sort of paintings you might find in a thrift store. Is that a fair characterization of his aesthetic strategy, Joseph?
It is a fair characterization. I'm not entirely sure how much of it is strategy and how much of it is just the way he paints.
Oh, he might just be, you know, right for a thrift store.
No, I think even in the selection that's in the Whitney, there's a kind of range of styles going on.
Right.
Which, it's always hard to tell with his installations of the floor-to-ceiling hang. It's hard to get a sense of the canvases as individual paintings, but I think even there's some which are much more thrift store than others. Mm-hmm. At times, he seems to go for a kind of very convincing photorealism. At times, there's kind of loopy abstraction. At times, there is a sort of bad painting aesthetic, which is very reminiscent of thrift store painting in that Jim Shaw sense. And so I find that even though when you see that installation, you might think it's all of a piece, it's really not.
Right, right. Some may be less than the total may be less than the sum of its individual parts. We're talking because the installation is so designed to militate against appreciation of any individual image. It's a sort of collective statement. I think Don would give it as a sort of anti-art statement about the nature or status of painting, isn't it, Colleen?
I mean, the anti-art rubric isn't really that useful for me. I wasn't particularly a fan of those paintings, or I guess of that strategy. I wish that the awkwardness was more awkward in the work, and the sort of skillfulness in quotes was more so. To me, there was a kind of homogeny that happened both from the hanging, but also from the way that the paintings were put together, that I had the feeling, not so much of thrift store, but more like a, you know, maybe like a painting three studio had been raided at some school. And,
right.
And to me, it was, I mean, although that room or kind of space within the third floor was distinct in its focus on painting of a particular sort, it was the strategy of the kind of exhibition within the exhibition that was really rampant on that floor made it very difficult for me to kind of engage with specific works. I had the feeling that I get anytime I go to an art fair, which I'm just so immediately overwhelmed by the presence of all these really radically different worlds just pushed in a way that feels arbitrary to me together, that it becomes difficult to engage with specific works. And I found that ironic that I had that reaction to the third floor, because Stuart Comer's goal, which I believe him to be sincere in, was to try and speak to works that were on the periphery or come up with strategies that weren't so market friendly, and yet it ended up feeling like what I... I don't think it's my own subjective experience, but what most of us find like the most market-driven context in which we see work, an art fair.
Yeah. Don, we're talking about the painter who...
The thing that struck me as particularly interesting in the statement is that the word art, and let's put it in quotes, which I think we have to do, gets lost in culture. What you have here is what's happening in a lot of academic discourse is what used to be called art history is now being part of cultural history or object history, as it's called also, the study of objects. So the statement talks about shifts in the globe, new technologies, all of that. And the specific objects presented here are, as I can see it, whatever one might argue about their virtues or lack of virtues, are really as signifiers of certain, so to say, current things that are happening out in the world out there. And these works signal that. And that's an issue that seems to me related very much to the post-art issue that Capro brought up as well. So everything about that statement, if I heard it correctly, and I think I remember noting it at the time also when I saw it first, there was no mention of any particular work, any artists, any point of view. The whole idea of art somehow seemed, shall we say, supplementary or accidental, or it's almost as though these pieces are anecdotal references to some cultural things that are going on globally in our society, et cetera. That struck me as the most interesting thing, apart from whether this work interested me or that work interested me.
Okay, thank you. Colleen, you mentioned in particular that the third floor rankled you on at least two of your visits to the show, such that the second and fourth came as some relief. But we sometimes go to art to be distressed, don't we? We look for the anxious object. What was it that really rankled you about this selection? Or just the way it was presented, perhaps?
Oh, I think it's more than just the way it was presented. I mean, one, just to pick up on what Joseph began with, of feeling like it was one show, I guess one connection that I would draw between all three exhibitions, but was most prevalent by far for me in the third floor, was the kind of archive as the form in which the work took. I mean, the archive as a form, just like painting or ceramic or any other form, I think needs rethought. And there were very few instances of presenting the archive that it felt like it was being rethought in some way. I mean, Julie Ault, I guess I'm willing to give a kind of historical pass to, because I think of group material as being so absolutely influential in asserting that idea of an artist practice as a curatorial practice. And I feel like there was a really thoughtful relationship between the works. And I also am a fan of both Martin Wong and David Wanamrowicz and was happy to see their works. But I was, speaking of Julie Ault, I was thinking about something that Doug Ashford, who was part of Group Material with Julie Ault, an art collective that was longstanding, said to me at some point about the strategy of group material, of using the curating as an art practice, which was, you know, in its inception about playing with the idea of authorship and trying to problematize the idea of authorship. But towards the end of group material, Julie Ault and Doug Ashford both felt that kind of leaving blank in some way the position of the author was too easily allowing the institution to come in and fill that role. And to me, that happened in a lot of works at the biennial, but particularly works on the third floor, where you end up with you know, collectives that I greatly admire, like Semiotext or Triple Canopy, but presented within the context of the biennial, I think they you know, become much less political and you know, lose a lot of the kind of stakes that they have outside of the context of the exhibition.
Thank you very much. I think it's a good moment, actually, to bring in our audience for some initial response. I would entreat you to hold back till later if there's anything in detail you have to say about Michel Grabner's fourth floor. Mostly in response to the discussion that's happened so far and to the positions that our panelists have begun to establish. Would be very much welcome what you have to say, and not to put any pressure on them to have an interesting opinion, although, or to express an interesting opinion, because I know they have interesting opinions, just to politely acknowledge that it's always very gratifying or flattering to the review panel to see former panelists come along and enjoy an evening in the audience. So just a mention, a welcome, a hello, a shout out to Robert Morgan, Walter Robinson, Alison Anderson Spivey, Becky Brown, and Jennifer Riley. But I expect brilliant thoughts from everybody. So, yes, gentlemen at the back. Please wait for the mic, if you would. You can't. Please wait for the mic, if you could. We're recording it, and so...
Thank you. Just a question. Of the three floors, which artist do you think has a history, has the potential of being a continuation as opposed to a one-night stand?
A continuation of what?
That he or she would have the potential, or you see the possibility of it, his or her work being significant continually.
Well, one of the things about this biennial is it seems to have also been skewed towards older artists. So there's plenty of people in the show who already have lengthy careers, many of whom are dead and are in the history books. So I'm not quite sure what the question is.
Yeah, it's not the Bruce Senniel. I mean...
I can't hear you. I'm just curious in regards to the wonderful show that was done at a reprise of the Armory Show that was done recently at the
New York Historical Society.
Yeah. And it was amazing for me, having not been able to go to the original show, to walk into that show and having it so strong of who and what those people were.
So are you asking who will remember in 100 years?
Yeah. All right.
Well, I'll be dead.
Well, we
won't remember anything.
That's a very fair question, but I feel in a way it is the question of the entire evening. We're asking the panel to say, Don has already given us 11 names of people that... Joe has already told us that Paul P is one of his favorite artists, and presumably that's not because he's of a one-night stand, but hopefully for a long relationship favorite kind of artist. So not to dismiss your question, just to say it's the question. It's the question of any review panel. What's significant? What does it mean? What's going to last? What do we care about and why? So, but thanks for reminding us that that's definitely our task here this evening. Any other comments?
I just want to answer that a little bit. I think that's an extremely important question, and the word there is significance. That's the key word. And when you look at the 1912 show, the Armory Show, I think one way of looking at it is in terms of what is called reception aesthetic, and hence Yauss's theory that there's always some objective horizon of expectations. This is his own idea, which a work is received in. Okay, so at that moment in 1912, those pieces, so to say, did not meet, quote, the horizon of expectations, at least in New York, okay? And even in Europe at that time, it was new, avant-garde, different, rebellious, transgressive, whatever the current cliches are. All those words are now retreads, basically. So the question I would, the answer I would give you is I don't think the show will be remembered in 100 years. I don't think it'll be remembered in 5 years. And for the simple reason that it does not, quote, challenge any horizon of expectations, so to say, that had been there. And in fact, it deals with every set of cliched expectations are around, from questioning authorship, the old French idea, deconstruction. So everything's out there, you know, archive as a form, whatever you want to call it. There are no boundaries anymore, no conventions, no limits, etc. It's a highly, what has been called, permanent pluralistic situation, and it's a situation in which there is really no center of value, as it were. And the question is whether these, what are the values, whether you want to call it cultural values, art values, et cetera. So apart from signaling something that has happened at a certain time right now, and it signals that there are certain people that are of, say, broad historical relevance, part of what I would call the field of operations, which interests me more than any individual artist, so to say, that this show will not have any reverberations in the future, and it will not be able to be put together again. Okay, at the Neue Gallery now, they've brought the what is left of the degenerate art show. Okay, now at a certain moment, that was a particularly important show. And it was more than just Munich, it traveled around Germany in general. Now you see it and it's sort of like, I don't know, like an old movie or something, but it's, you know, sort of extremely interesting, fascinating, historical, but we cannot get a hold of the kind of tensions that surrounded that show, social tensions, aesthetic tensions, political tensions, the meaning of that show at that time, the fact that it, in fact, attracted more people in the public than the show that was put on the Haus der Kunst of sort of quasi-classical art or whatever you want to call that kind of neo-academic art. So I don't think that many of these Whitney biennials, frankly, will be, quote, reproducible in that way because they are of that special significance. But certain individual artists, depending upon what they continue to produce and how they're picked up by institutions, you know, and celebrated and also in the marketplace. Never forget that, because that has become the arbiter of values, whether you like it or not, right, in many quarters. And that is very hard to predict, very hard to predict.
That's a good question on the floor. Thank you.
Can I just add
No, because let's get, this is the moment for the audience, that's the point. So please, could you wait for the mic, please?
We might point out also that in sheer practical terms, not much in that show is going to last in terms of conservation. I would hate to be the conservator of new media, which MoMA has just hired. Interestingly enough, also you have technologies which will become obsolete, and this may make all kinds of videos and digital pieces disappear. Anything made out of bits of material will probably disappear. It just can't endure. The underlying technical issues are all about impermanence.
But you said something else very important, the video. This will be on your app. It will be like old issues of the New York Times or the Herald Tribune or the Journal American, which I still remember from my golden youth, and so forth. And it's all going to be part of an archive, and you can call it up somewhere, but whether it will be installed again the way it's installed here is rather dubious.
No, but Donald, the software will become obsolete, and unless you spend a lot of money migrating to the new software.
That's true, like the old
you
movies.
You won't have the app. You won't be able to access it.
Right, so it's all gone. As Goethe said, alles vergänglich ist
nur ein Gleichnis. We're here really to think about it right now, but so if its frangibility should make us more urgently address what we think about it now. Yes, Robert Morgan.
Professor Cuspid, it sounds like you're suggesting that there's a whole series, a regimen of various exhibitions that would be classified more as symptomatic rather than significant. Is that what I understand?
Well, yes, but, you know, a symptom is significant, you know. The question is what it symbolizes and what is hidden by it, what is disguised by conversion of it. But I have to say I do subscribe to...
I was thinking more of the object.
Oh, the object. You're thinking of the object. A lot of these objects are symptomatic, yes, but that doesn't mean, quote, they aren't art, depending upon what you want to call art these days. In other words, the issue is, you know, what the intrinsic value is, okay? Or you might look at it another way. Psychoanalysis began sort of with the study of hysteria, and Charcot, it was realized that a lot of these hysterical women were performing, they were taking cues from him, their so-called somatization. So you might say a lot of these artists are, so to say, performing hysterics, taking cues from the society. And so it's symptomatic in that sense. So what idea is au courant in the society? Well, one of the curators, Puerto Rico, is important. It wants to be statehood, okay? Hawaii, let's bring Hawaii in, that far-flung. I don't think there was anything from Alaska that was there. You know, so it becomes indeed symptomatic
of some position, attitude, and then the question is why that position, what is that?
Okay, thank you very much. Yes, but please don't ask questions to individual panelists. Just give us your comments on what has been said so far. Nope. Thank you.
Just ask questions.
Well, all right, no. All right, then I'll make it a statement. I haven't been to the show, but I did take a quick look online, and it seemed to me that a lot of the work was what I would, some of the work at least, documentary or political statement, but to pick up on Donald's point, not art. And if I would turn that into a question, but maybe you can comment.
Let's take some, we'll take more, and that what we're going to do is absorb the comments and questions into our consideration of the fourth floor when we get to it. So do feel free to ask a question, but don't expect an answer.
For the sake of argument, I think there are lots of memorable works in the show. Just for the sake of argument, it's the first Whitney biennial that included a guy playing a video game for the whole length of the show. It's the first Whitney biennial with a painting that was a giant painting disguised as a wall with other paintings hung on it. It's the first Whitney biennial with abstract paintings done on LTV TV screens. It was the first Whitney biennial with a giant sort of, what was that thing made out of colored thread? What was that, a spume, a waterfall out of thread?
It's a fabric.
I think that basically what I'm saying is that it's sort of hard, it's sort of our job as viewers to look at the show and see things and have it mean something to us, you know. And you know, it's easy to say, oh, well, this floor means this and this floor means that, and it's all boring and dumb, and it is, you know. But as a viewer, I'm not willing to let it go at that, you know. I want something out of it if I'm going to go. There's 103 artists, you know. You have to take some looking. And I would tell the person who made the video to slow down a little bit and focus on some of the pieces.
Yeah, thank you. That's well taken, all points. Good, good. Well, we'll have another chance after our discussion of the